It's Wednesday, April 14th, 2021. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. Bernard Madoff, the convicted Ponzi schemer, has died in prison at the age of 82. He's expecting two people to pay for his funeral, then four other people will have to pay for theirs, and so on and so on. Major companies including Google, Amazon, and Starbucks issued a statement in a New York Times advertisement against restrictive new voter laws like the ones enacted in Georgia. In fact, the backlash has gotten so bad, Gladys Knight and the Pips are going to start singing Midnight Train from Georgia. CNN interviewed two women who claimed to have attended some of Matt Gaetz's sex and drug parties, but they wanted to remain anonymous. Paid or unpaid, if I attended a Matt Gaetz sex and drug party, I would want to remain anonymous too. In England, a reward of $2,750 has been offered in the theft of Darius, the world's longest rabbit, which was stolen over the weekend. Police don't have any suspects, but have named Elmer J. Fudd as a person of interest. Justin Bieber said that mistrust caused problems for the first year of his marriage. Thankfully, because it was so early into their wedlock, it wasn't too late for him to say sorry to his wife, Haley. After Taylor Swift's appearance on Stephen Colbert's late night show, her fans are convinced that the next re-recorded album of hers to be released will be 1989. This makes sense considering that if you're gonna ask your fans to pay again for your old music, you might as well go back 31 years to do it. In an interview with French magazine L'Officiel, Nick Jonas said that he is fortunate to have his wife Priyanka Chopra as his muse, especially on those nights when she allows him to stay up past his bedtime to work on new music. David Hasselhoff's daughter Haley will be the first plus-size model on a cover of a European issue of Playboy magazine. This is yet another case of a Hasselhoff being present when barriers are being broken in Europe. Family Matters star Jaleel White has launched a new custom brand of marijuana called Purple Urkel. It's said to offer the kind of high that will leave users asking, "Can I do that?" Former Bachelor star Colton Underwood came out as gay this morning. This is a refreshing change from men who watch The Bachelor who constantly have to say they're straight. Now let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello and as always I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete.
Well, I just want to say that Veronica and I became a part of the many cabal that have gotten the vaccine today. But I also am a little depressed about it because according to WebMD, the fact that I didn't get any side effects means it's because I'm too old and my body doesn't react as quickly to anything that has that it's trying to fight off inside of it. So, you know, even this vaccine is ageist.
I have a question though, Pete. We didn't post a selfie of us getting the vaccine.
Oh, well, that's why I didn't take.
Yeah, I know. Damn it.
Okay.
It's not real until it's
okay.
Posted.
It's only the first dose.
So get
it's
our cards, Veronica. We'll do it now.
Yeah, yeah. You have one more dose to make up the difference.
I just wanted to make sure. Joe.
Hi, everyone listening on Google Podcasts, and very happy National Gardening Day. Also, very happy National Dolphin Day. And National Pecan Day, not pecan, pecan.
Same thing.
What day is National Pecan Day, though?
I don't know when Pecan Day is, but it is National Pecan Day. By the way, Pete, Veronica, yeah. Have you gotten your welcome message yet from Bill Gates, or are you waiting for that today?
I'm going to make you laugh, though. Like about 5 minutes after we got the shots, we were sitting in the area waiting to leave. And I all of a sudden started thinking about getting a PC. I swear to God, I'm not joking. It just came to me. And it's like, I don't know if the joke was in my head because you've said it so many times now, or if I read an article this morning about something I could do with my VR thing if I had a PC. And I'm like, and I think it just all of a sudden it came, oh, look, I should get a PC. And I went, God damn it.
Not our welcome method, but if he's going to be sending something, I expect flowers or an edible arrangement.
That's, you'll be getting an Xbox.
I'll be,
an edible Xbox.
Elizabeth.
Hey, it's Wednesday, my dudes. I don't have any special days or nonsense. So, I did try to go get my donut at Krispy Kreme with my vaccine card the other night. Thinking a Monday evening in Burbank would not be crowded. Fucking mile long line. Told and you. I don't even like those damn donuts that much, so I just left. I just left for
I getting told it. You.
Do they not give away donuts anyway when they have like the hot and fresh sign? Don't they give you like a free donut? I thought
I don't know, but they the sign was on and that damn line was around the block and I was like, I wanted to get my new trash can for my apartment and go home. Forget it.
If you get your second vaccine, they let you ride through the glazing machine.
Oh my god.
You know what that is worth it.
So
Rose is the thing I've ever heard.
Hey Danny.
Hello. And no matter whether you got the first or the second one, getting vaccinated is fire. So congratulations.
Sure is. Ian.
Hey, y'all. I've had all my shots, and it's been more than 2 weeks, so I am like ironclad at this point. Come out with me.
Go out and partay.
I don't know.
Ian, you know, you got your when was the last shot? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, over 2 weeks now, yeah.
Because it did something to your mustache. It looks
Shut up.
It's okay.
It was robbed.
That's not a mustache. It's a natural mask.
Oh my God.
Well, I still think it looks great, Ian.
Thank you.
Pay attention to Peter.
Now you look less like an English newsboy, more like a French pastry chef now.
You know, it worked better for the role anyway, so that's fine. I'll take it.
There you go. Okay, so let's start tonight's show. We actually have a lot of information that I hope we can get to tonight. So it's going to be a good one. This morning, evil Ponzi schemer Bernie Madoff died in prison. This is probably one death no one is upset about. That being said, this past weekend, fans of hip-hop music were saddened by the passing of rap icon DMX. This kind of outpouring of grief is something new when it comes to the public's reactions to the deaths of celebrities, even ones we have never had the opportunity to meet. For tonight, we looked at several different articles from sites like Vice, Teen Vogue, Psychology Today, and whatsyourgrief.com to try and break down why we feel so bad when someone we don't really know dies. So without going into too much detail right now, as we will cover this later, have you ever grieved after the passing of a celebrity? Now, I know we touched upon this a little bit when Dustin Diamond passed away, but I kind of want to dig into it a little bit further tonight. Elizabeth, let's start with you.
Oh, my, for sure, number one was Robin Williams, hands down. I was at work, and the news came in, and we had to start, like, pulling all this material, you know, all the material we had about him, but I was, like, in shock for a minute here. I was like, this is one of those joke things where it's like, he fell off a cliff in New Zealand. You know, it's not real. And it was unfortunately very, very sadly real. And it was so, you know, the week at work was all about that. So I couldn't really get away from it either if I wanted to. But it kind of galvanized everybody in that office, putting these things together. And like the next day's show was all about him and all these, you know, just sort of without, you know, too much host interference, just playing his interviews and movie moments and, you know, like the younger kids to them, like the people my age to care, finding the Aladdin clips and other things, and other people found, you know, his earlier stuff. And it was really, really sad. And like my brother even texted me and wrote, I know you're an adult, but are you okay?
Yeah.
Because it was like, that's how much he meant to me. And even like, I hadn't even necessarily like interacted or watched a lot of his work, super like his more recent work at the time, but I loved what I grew up on, and like Aladdin was where I was like, you can be silly for money, like even as a kid, like mm-hmm. that kind of like rapid fire, fun, quick thinking stuff really, really inspired me. And so it really just truly absolutely devastated me.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
Obviously, I think that I talked about this before, but Phil Hartman was a big one for me. Not just how it happened, but I mean, he is kind of an icon for me. And the fact that, the same way that Robin Williams or Chris Farley or whatnot, you've lost somebody that you know was so unique, and that talent will never be able to speak again with something. And then another one that really, and I think it was more the story than anything else that really kind of just was when Carrie Fisher died, and then Debbie Reynolds, her mother, died the very next day because Carrie died. That was more like the story. That was more like, here's somebody that loved somebody so much that they couldn't live without them. And yeah, that kind of affected you too, but that was in a different way. But number one, absolutely Phil Hartman.
Hey, does anybody else want to add to this? Pete, then I'll go to Ian. Go ahead, Pete.
Well, I mean, for me, it was Michael Jackson. There's just so much to it that just kind of like would add it to it. But I mean, the first concert I ever went to when I was, I think, three was the Jackson 5. I idolized Michael Jackson when I was a little kid, when he was still almost a little kid. So there was this, always that connection. And I don't know if everybody remembers, but like the day that it happened, like at first it wasn't that he was dead. It was that the stories were about the ambulances coming from the property that he was renting. And there was like a big moment between like about a 2-hour gap between that happening and then eventually saying that he died. And like in that time, it just became more and more obvious that this was not going to end well. And so it just had time to kind of set in. And I remember my mom calling me, which was just so weird because, it's like, my mother, is obviously of another generation, but she called me because she knew how much he had meant to me when I was a kid, and I think she called me when they announced he was dead. And that was just crazy. And it was interesting because I was going to London that weekend by myself. And when I got to London, there had been all these tributes in Piccadilly Circus for him, with people just breaking out into like these big group Thriller dance things and doing the moonwalk everywhere. And then like an idiot, I decided there was a show on the West End that was a Michael Jackson show that had been there for a few months, where they were kind of highlighting all of his career. And I, like an idiot, went to the show thinking, well, maybe this will be nice. And I've never done this before, but I literally cried almost the entire show. And it's just like, and it just was such a weird feeling because it was like, I was in a room with all these other people that were probably feeling just as bad. And it just felt like the only appropriate place to do it. So I don't know. It's just, that really got me.
Hey, Ian, what about you?
The one for me was David Bowie. When I was a kid, my mom would play his music a lot. And then when I got into college, like they started re-releasing all his records, they put out the box set and stuff. And I saw him in concert and I listened to him a ton, all of his old records. And I think also part of it was just being a gay kid in a small town. And he was somebody that everybody liked, and he was fearless and did whatever he wanted, dressed how he wanted, and said whatever he felt like. His music was all over the place. And it was shocking, partly because he kind of dropped off after the last 2 years. He put out one record a few years prior, but hadn't stopped touring several years before that. Wasn't really doing music, and then dropped a record on his birthday that nobody knew about. I think he put out one single like a few days before, and then dropped the record and then died like a couple days later. I mean, it was just, you're like, oh my God, he's got new music. And then 2 days later, he's dead. So it was very shocking. I think I realized he was a big touchstone for me in a lot of ways, growing up and dealing with a lot of stuff. So he was definitely the first one I really felt like I missed. Mm-hmm. Prince was another one, but not quite. I loved Prince growing up, and he was one of those ones that really had a huge influence on me, but not quite the same as Bowie. Yeah.
Okay. Danny, what about you?
It's one of those, I think I spoke about the last show, where a lot of us remember exactly where we were when we heard that Selena had been shot and killed. I was getting my hair cut, and a lady came in and and said that, you know, she had been shot. You know, I had just started to recently become a fan of hers and started really listening to her music. And, you know, you mourn the artist just because you see them so young and know that they have such a great career ahead of them, but it's cut short, you know, by nonsense, you know. And yeah, that affected me. And the one that affected me too, and I didn't think it would, was when I heard that Corey Monteith had passed away, who was the lead actor in Glee. I just think there was, I don't know. I watched Glee, you know, and, you know, because we talked about several episodes in the beginning, but there was just something about his character I was able to relate to. And I saw a little part of me in him. You know, he wasn't the best singer, you know, but he managed, you know, and he did the best he could with what he had. And, you know, he was one of my favorite characters. And to see that his life was cut short, you know, by drugs, you don't know whether. And I honestly don't even remember whether it was accidental or on purpose, but just to know that drugs took away another life, you know, like it did, you know, with so many other artists.
I believe it was, you know, accidental.
You know, it just sucks, you know. Yes.
No, go ahead. Finish what you're saying. I'll jump in after you finish.
No, go ahead. I'm done.
Oh, no, I was going to say, you're always saying such nice things about our show. Good thing you weren't watching us back then, because I, if I remember correctly, and I might be wrong, Joe might be the only one who remember this. I think the weekend that he died, we had the cast come out and do one of them singing. They tried to make me go to rehab, but I said no. And that was it. Okay, maybe we weren't very sensitive back then, but yeah, we did do that.
But the show
right now.
Thanks.
You know, I mean, that one, we're just like,
if you're in the entertainment industry, you open yourself up to be, you know, mocked. You know, so it goes with it. I'm not surprised, you know, and you have to take things like that in good nature.
Now, bigger question. Now, let's say just by chance, Taylor Swift's plane goes down into an alligator farm. Like, will you wear black for like a year after that? I mean, how would that handle?
No, I'll cherish the fact that I have her music, that I've been able to see her live, you know, up close to, you know, at a taping for Dancing with the Stars, not just at a concert, you know? So yeah, I'm good.
First of all, what makes you think that Taylor would not survive that? Because she's a tough girl. She'd be like the only one to survive. She would like get her way out. And then like would date one of the Gators for 6 months. She would dump them and get an album out of it.
Write an album about it.
The Gator, and then they would have to.
She's willowy, but she's a scrapper.
She's like a toothpick. She will break.
No, but she's a scrapper. She's long. She's got the wingspan advantage.
Okay, good.
Got reach.
Yeah, for me, and I know we've also talked about this on the show before. You know, it was Robin Williams. Like, I still remember finding out he was actually on the phone with my mother-in-law, and he was talking to her. And I just, do you remember, Pete? I just started like screamed. I'm like, yeah. Oh my god! Like, it can't be happening. And again, I just think because, you know, I grew up watching so much of his talent, and he just had, there will never be another Robin Williams, in my opinion. But the one that really, you know, I was thinking about this today, but the one that really got me a lot, and I felt like I had lost a family member, was John Ritter. When he passed, like, I still remember too, my dad actually broke the news to me, like he had just told me, like, my grandfather had passed away, or my uncle. And again, because he was just such an important part of my childhood. So I think, you know, and I'm going to skip the next question I had for you guys, because you guys kind of already told me, you know, why these deaths affected you so much. So now I want to talk about some of the findings that we discovered today. And I think you're going to find them very interesting. So here's an interesting fact. According to psychotherapist Julia Brewer, quote, the relationship between one who develops strong feelings about a particular celebrity, sports team, or television/cable star is called a parasocial relationship, since this is a one-sided relationship. Below is a summary of the reasons I found from the articles. So here's the first one.
I love that you said below. Is it for, hold on, let's all look.
Sorry. Okay, I'm going to start talking about this now.
No, that's just my crotch.
You're throwing me off. Stop it. Okay, so the first thing she said was, we don't know celebrities, but we know celebrities. They have often been a regular part of our lives in the shows and movies we love, creating the music that defines moments in our lives, creating art and writing we love. We have often seen them grow and change, and in some cases have felt connected to those changes. So does anybody have any thoughts on that first study? I mean, I agree with everything she said. Elizabeth.
Yeah, because part of what you connect to something that they put out, whether that's even fully part of their personality or not, you're still connecting with it. And I mean, I think that's like part of why the Robin Williams one hurt so much, is because he always seemed good mood, funny, happy, and to know he was struggled with depression and then also had this like the dementia, or you know, Lewy body something, know that he was facing something that was going to rob him of all the things that made him think him, and he couldn't, and that pushed, you know, the chemical button in his brain to take his own life. Mm-hmm. You know, that shatters in a way sort of, you know, how you feel and think about what you know about him, which is in reality you don't. You, like, I always felt slightly silly because I was like, well, I don't know the man. It's not like he's a friend or a family member. How could I be so upset about him? And yet I'm like teary-eyed now thinking about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in the Psychology Today article, therapist Anise Hansen says that the bond you may have had when Elvis Presley or Robin Williams was alive may have been and still may be highly impactful. She says, our relationships with celebrities are different than our everyday relationships. Our emotional bond with an influential person is based on our projection of what we need that person to be for us during influential moments of our lives. So does this make sense to all of us here? Mm-hmm. Anybody want to add anything to that? Because I can just keep going.
No, I mean, there was you know, there was another study that that kind of echoed this, that said that a lot of times, you know, for a lot of people, like what they used as an example was, say you're about to go take a test, and it's a test that you just don't think you're going to pass. A lot of people would sometimes like look at a celebrity who went through struggles in their life, because we do learn so much about them from the media, and, you know, and they overcame them. And sometimes that's that you use that as a motivational tool. And they said, there's also another thing that a lot of people do, is that like, they'll take like say an action star, and use, you know, look at, they could do, they, you know, they could get out of this, so I should be able to have no problem passing this test. So mm-hmm. We relate, you know, our own lives to things we've learned or seen from celebrities in different ways.
Yeah, the study that you're talking about, Pete, that's actually, I believe, the Vice study.
Yeah, it's the Vice one.
And it said that, let's see, we consume so much information about our favorite celebrities through the media that we sometimes begin to find commonalities with them, which makes people more relatable to us, even if the perception of them isn't the same as the truth about them. So that's the one you were talking about.
You know, it's kind of like a lot like, you know, Elizabeth, when you talked about like the songs that you used to play when you were going, you know, when you were going through the chemo and everything like that, because like it, you know, you, or like the music that you played when you were
going through. Oh, my Still Alive playlist that you can find on Spotify.
Yeah, I mean, like it's you know, it kind of.
Download me now.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I guess we use anything that somebody gave us to relate to our situation. I guess that's kind of one of the bonds.
Yeah, it's for sure. Yeah, because sometimes it's easier to find that outside of yourself,
mm-hmm.
and then acknowledge it or find it within yourself.
Yeah.
It's, or sometimes you don't know how to express it, but then you come across a song or a movie or a book or whatever that you're like, ah, that's the thing I was trying to say about how I felt, and then you can hold it up for people and be like, I'm bad at articulating how I feel about X, Y, or Z, but here is the thing that does it for me.
Yeah. So another study also found that we feel connected to our favorite celebrities in a way where these connections aren't just not about how much we love, appreciate, and respect these people, but sometimes because they remind us of all of us. This can be as specific as our connection to a moment in our past, like we just talked about, or as a general fact that they are about our age or have something else in common with us. Do you guys feel like that about any celebrities? I'm just curious, that you feel like you have a special connection with a certain celebrity. Danny?
Someone that's passed, right?
Growing up,
you know, there's this thing, you know, I don't know if it happened in your family, Veronica, but growing up, you would know it was Saturday because your parents played a specific type of music in our household. And in our household, it was Juan Gabriel, who kind of like the Mexican version of Michael Jackson, you know, the closest, you know, analogy I can put out there. And when he passed, the first thing I did, I'm like, oh my God, my mom's going to flip. And she was at Disneyland with my sister that day. And I text them, and my sister said she got so distraught, they had to leave. You know, it was, it's just like you relate so many memories growing up, you know, knowing that at every family party, you know, when the karaoke started, you know, my mom was going to be up there singing Juan Gabriel with her sisters. You know, when he was in concert, easiest birthday gift, you know, easiest Mother's Day gift. You know, it was just, there was so much of him infused in all our lives that, you know, it was really sad to see that part go. You know, so, you know, now, is there a special connection with celebrity? Not necessarily as big of a Swiftie as I may be, but, no. You know, it's just like, I think I relate more to those artists growing up that, you know, helped mold the type of person I am today.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you're saying. Yeah, because they have some connection, you know, because there's also, really quick before I go to you guys, there's also another study that we read that said that sometimes we also feel connected to either friends or family members in our lives who have passed as well. Mm-hmm. So I found that very interesting as well. You know, Pete, go ahead and then I'll go to Ian.
Well, I kind of wanted to go off of what Danny was just saying. I think one of the reasons why it's probably a little harder now to relate directly to celebrities because we now know way too much about them. You know, it's like if you think about it, if the media scrutiny was as intense, I mean, I know Robin Williams didn't die that many years ago, but it's gone tenfold even since his death. But if we had like that kind of scrutiny into these people's lives, either we would find out that they're very human and they're not as admirable as we might want to make them out to be, or maybe like we just start to realize that they are incredibly different from us. And maybe like knowing less about these people is one of the, I mean, look, I don't want to know more about Michael Jackson than I already know. You know, and the things that come out now, you know, I pick and choose which ones I want to believe, you know, for the simple purposes of like, I don't want it to change my opinion of who that person was. And so unless, you know, like there's video, you know, that cannot have been doctored, I won't buy into a lot of the stuff I've heard since then. But again, you know, because of the intense amount of media involved in everything, in people's lives now, I just like, you know, like, look, people who don't know us know a lot about our lives because we're on here talking about them. So, you know, so it's like, yeah, I think we offer so much information nowadays that it's not easy to find somebody that you relate well to anymore.
Yeah. Ian, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to add, talking about the, you know, the celebrities that you loved when you were kids. I feel like that is so different and so much more powerful because when you're a kid, you don't necessarily understand what celebrity is. You don't necessarily understand how unapproachable or unattainable that person is. And you're also, you know, you're creating friendships in your head with cartoon characters and Sesame Street characters. You don't really get that these aren't real to you or to anybody else. So there's this, you kind of create this bond that doesn't exist in your head.
Yeah. Joe?
I don't know if this is... I think a bunch of people would call this macabre. I don't. But I've visited a lot of celebrity graves. Mostly for me to kind of say thank you. Especially the people that I never would have... Like, they would have passed away even when I was a kid. And before that. You know? Or when I... Like, obviously, I visited Walt Disney... You know, I did visit Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds, their crypt over there. I mean, even Paul Walker. Like, I sometimes go and like seek out where they are buried here, and I'm very lucky that we're in L.A., where a lot of them are, and I go out to just kind of, you know, say my thank yous to them. Did any of you find this weird or odd? Because I don't.
No. No, I've done it too. I've been to Richie Valens's gravesite in Pacoima. And that was kind of special the first time I was there. But no, I don't think it's weird at all, because again, we see them, you know, I mean, as loved ones. So there's nothing weird when you go pay your respects to a grave if it's somebody that you know. So
if you were on the ground digging, screaming, "Take me, Paul!"
That's a bit far.
Of course, you think you have to be respectful and all that, but my biggest issue is that, you know, Phil Hartman was the one that affected me the most, and he was cremated and scattered under Catalina Bay over in Avalon, on the Catalina, Avalon Bay, Catalina, and so I still have to go out to Catalina sometime to say thank you to him. But I have gone to the house, which seems a little bit weird, but that's all I got. So, and that's a bit odd, but other than that, you know, I've seen a lot. And, if anyone's interested and wants to know where their celebrity is, I can help them find it.
He's still a little block from Bruce Lee's grave and Brandon Lee, of course. Mm-hmm. That was fun. I went there a few times.
I was just going to say, no, I don't think it's weird at all. Like,
no,
It's like a processing thing. It's something that brings you comfort. And again, I don't think you're not crossing a line in the sense, because these are mostly public, or if not all public, sites that you can go to. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you are going to like a private cemetery or graveyard or you know, home or anything like that. And you're not, you know, there are also worse, you know, death tourists. It's not like you're a death tourist. Like, you're not getting a glee from this. Sort of like it's a peace, comfort thing. It's not like, you
know, I've always thought,
like, you're trying
to
find the Manson house, which I know they demolished. Yeah. And
I mean, I've always thought, because Pete said about Michael Jackson, and I get why he's in the private section of the Glendale Mausoleum. The Glendale Mausoleum, by the way, is the who's who of Hollywood. Like that's where all the top notch people are. And there's a private section that you can't just normally get into. And that's where he is. But where he is really, it's this beautiful section. I don't know how, I mean, he must have bought it ages ago to be able to get the one that he has. And it's gorgeous. But at the same time, fans can't go visit. And I always sometimes thought that was a negative. Like, I think a lot of times, you know, Pete talked about how he felt, and sometimes going there helps. Going to a grave helps, and I think I've always thought that was a problem. I wish that they would at least have like maybe a day, one day a year, or a week, or something where you could go. But I get why, because they don't want to be overloaded. Yeah. But at the same time, you know.
Yeah, I've been to Gregory Peck's tomb, which is actually in the Cathedral of
the Cathedral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so, you know, when I found out that he, you know, it was there, that's where I chose to take my students on a field trip to. I said, oh, let's go to the, but I really wanted to go see his grave. So his tomb. Pete.
Yeah, it's, you know, like when Robin Williams died, Veronica and I were going to San Francisco that weekend. And when we got by the house that was in Mrs. Doubtfire, there were just flowers everywhere and thank you notes and pictures and people. And it's like, it was a great cathartic moment, because, you know, we see all these, like, these things on TV now, like tonight you see all these people outside, you know, like on the street where the latest shooting in Minneapolis took place, and like everything that happened with George Floyd, and there's all these remembrances of people like that who nobody knew, and because of tragic circumstances, they're kind of like all brought together in that grief. But then you go to something like with the Robin Williams one, and you realize that, like, we're all not there for grief. We're all there because of how important, you know, the good stuff was with that person. And it's like, and it's a whole different thing. And like, you know, and I think sometimes, especially like a guy like Robin Williams, like, I don't think, I mean, obviously when you get to the point where you're willing to consider suicide, you don't realize just how important you are to people. And it's sad, because had he probably known how important he was and what his death would mean to people, he might not have done it. I mean, you know, that's giving more importance to our opinions than it's worth. But yeah, I think it's really like what Joe said about going to the cemetery. I don't see anything wrong with it at all. I mean, we grieve in whatever way we want to, but obviously there are focal point places that are kind of like, this place means something about that person. And so, yeah, it's important.
Robin was, by the way, cremated and his ashes scattered into San Francisco Bay, which I think is very fitting because he loved that city. And next time I go up, because I haven't been up since he passed away, I'm going to take a moment over by San Francisco Bay.
Yanni?
Yeah, I remember the only time I've ever been in a crowd where they're mourning a celebrity was for Michael Jackson. I made the trip to Hollywood and there was just so many people gathered around his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And it was just, there was something about being there. There was this energy where all whatever, people may have thought about him, you know, it seemed like everything was forgotten because at that moment, everybody just knew that someone bigger than himself, had passed, and that, he was, after all, human, just like the rest of us. And everybody was actually very respectful. They took pictures, and walked, they kept it very respectful. It wasn't chaotic or crazy like when Kobe passed away and, it got to be a little too rowdy over at Staples Center, but yeah. I just thought about that right now when Pete was talking.
But Danny, just to that point, was it less sad and more kind of cathartic because you were within a group of people that were like-minded in that sense?
Yeah. Everybody was there for the same reason. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of how we felt.
I felt bad for the people that went to the wrong star because there's also a radio personality, Michael Jackson, and a lot of people went there. It's funny. Yeah. Who was the star? Was it the one we talked about earlier? Who was the star from Mexico that he has a star on the Walk of Fame, and he just had a ton of. I took pictures for you, Veronica.
Wasn't it Juan Gabriel?
Yeah.
Juan
Gabriel. Yeah. Yeah. His star also. He has a star on the Walk of Fame here in Hollywood, too. And I remember when they had the gathering. That gathering lasted days. Lots of people, they just kept putting stuff on there because that was down the street from my old apartment there. Yeah.
Yeah. He was an icon. And like Danny said, you cannot be Latino and not say that you did not grow up, listening to his music. But the day that Michael Jackson died, I remember my mom and I had tickets for the Pantages Theater. We were going to go see Dirty Dancing, and we went to dinner to Kabuki first. And we saw all these people around this Michael Jackson star, but it was the wrong one. So it was just, yeah, my mom's like, oh, look, I'm like, Mom, that's not his, I don't think that's a star. So people were taking like flowers to the wrong star. Yeah. I guess the other Michael Jackson, isn't he like a DJ or something? No, was he like a DJ or
something? Yeah, he was a radio personality.
Yeah, I just thought that was really weird.
It's funny.
That's nice. It's on him too, though.
I was like, MJ would not be on Vine because the Hollywood Walk of Fame goes mostly down Hollywood, but it also like branches off down Vine. But the people that are on Vine usually, unless they specifically ask, like in front of Capitol Records or whatnot, are usually not your higher tier stars. And I was just like, MJ wouldn't be on Vine. It was like, yeah, we were by the Walgreens. No.
We were sitting by the Walgreens. We just kept seeing people showing up with flowers. And Mom's like, oh, that's his star. I'm like, no, I don't think so. Like, I don't think that's the right Michael Jackson. But okay, so let me move on then with some more of our findings. They also say that we connect with the way the celebrity dies, whether it's cancer, suicide, overdose, accident, or any other type of death, this can hit a nerve. It may be because we have struggled with the same thing, or it may be because we lost someone in the same way. Another thing that we found out was that they said that celebrities always are there to comfort us. Maybe it was binge watching The Sopranos to get you through the early days of your own grief, or perhaps it was listening to Velvet Underground that you got through a painful time in your life. What do you guys think about that? I think that's very, very true as well. I mean, everything about this just makes perfect sense to me. Ian.
I don't, not necessarily a connection here because I don't do drugs, but I think like overdose deaths, like Prince and Tom Petty and stuff is rough because obviously you don't know what's going on with someone like Prince. He had a lot of pain from the crazy dancing he was doing for years. And of course, opiate addiction is such a terrible thing. But then to see somebody just cut life cut short because of a mistake, just taking too much of something that they shouldn't be taking anyway. Those just, I feel like, are really sad, you know.
Yeah. Elizabeth?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, Chadwick Boseman, man, that's... He died of cancer, and I just had, slash, not technically still have, but you know what I mean. Like, I don't get the all clear for another, like, 4 years. That it's like a survivor's guilt thing in that case.
Mm-hmm. Pete?
Well, kind of to the other part that you were saying about that they help, they're always there for us. One of the other things I was reading that's not kind of in the notes was, you know, we have some of these celebrities that are around for a long time in our lives and, you know, different eras of our life. And so they kind of build up like almost like they're like indestructible, you know, like they're because they're bigger than life and they've been around, like, you know, like we joke around about Tom Cruise all the time. But if something happens to Tom Cruise tomorrow, that's like 30, almost 40 years of everybody's life. I mean, you know, anybody who's 40 or, you know, or close to it, that's, you know, and some people on this panel, that's your entire life, somebody that you've known. So they almost feel like they're invincible, like they're not, this is not going to happen. And then they die. And then all of a sudden you have to kind of look at two things. Number one, your own mortality, but number two, it kind of knocks down a little bit of that mystique about them, about how, what you always thought of, because they kind of were just always there, you know? And so it's a weird dynamic when something like that happens. Like to me, like when Johnny Carson died, that's one of the things I like, cause I grew up, you know, from the time I was like 3 or 4, you know, late whenever I was allowed to be up late at night, I saw Johnny Carson. And then when he retired, it was one thing, but then when he died, it was like, wow, that's the end of like something. People are never going to see another Johnny Carson. It's just strange.
Well, that's also part of one of the other studies that they were saying, that like the Tom Cruise example that you just gave, that, you know, when someone like him, you know, passes away, it's like we lose part of our youth as well. But it also, it all goes back to, you know, having, like you said, also Johnny Carson, having a connection to a certain point in your life, whether, you know, when you're younger. So all that is intertwined. Joe?
I think, and this is to piggyback off of what Pete says, I think it also affects us when it's something that's totally unexpected. I mean, we have celebrities that are older or we know that are sick or things like that. I mean, mm-hmm. I can remember being very lucky to have met Don Rickles before he passed away. You know, to me that was, I mean, I grew up with him, but I mean, he was an old man, unfortunately, and, you know, time caught up with him. Or like Christopher Reeves, who was always sick. I mean, you knew that. So, but like Phil Hartman being murdered, or Chris Farley, you didn't know about what was going on with Chris Farley's life, and he was a very young man. You know, even Michael Jackson was part of that, was the shock, because, you know, we're expect Michael wasn't sick. He wasn't really old, you know, and all of a sudden, boom, he's gone. Like that is, I think that's part of it too, because it makes you examine yourself. It makes you say, hey, you know, how long do any of us have around here? I mean, it's one thing for like when you know someone's sick or something. The Chadwick Boseman was very, he hit it. But I mean, yeah. Most insiders knew that he had cancer and that he was.
Yeah, that's hard. Or when it's age, you know. Yeah. Too. I remember when Lucille Ball died, I was devastated. You know, she's my all time favorite comedian. But at the same time, she was older. So it was kind of expected. I hate to say it that way. Yeah, but when someone like, you know, like John Ritter, who was so young and just suddenly. That's, you know, that was shocking.
You're like, man, they got a ton of time. All of these things that were going to go on. I mean, I think, you know, Paul Walker was, he was in the Fast and Furious, but I mean, he wasn't a super, superstar. But I think part of what everybody, you know, flipped out, he died in a car accident, in like a car that like would have been on the Fast and the Furious, the irony of it. And then the fact that he was way too young to be taken away from us and things like that. That kind of thing just kind of hits you.
Yeah. When you look at like some of these people, like Joe mentions Michael Jackson again, you think to yourself, Michael Jackson defied gravity. I mean, like he did things that even professional dancers took years to figure out what he was doing. Like, you know, I saw him fly into a stadium on a jetpack. Like, there's not a lot of people that do that. And it's like almost that he could die too. Like that you could die. Like I know I can die. I know that everybody on the screen could die, but I didn't think Michael Jackson could die. Like, I didn't think that, like there's so many people. I mean, you're talking about Paul Walker. What an ironic way to die. What about John Lennon? I mean, John Lennon, again, for most of you, are probably too young, but I mean, there's a couple of us who were alive then. I was too young for it really to matter as much. But John Lennon got killed by somebody with a gun, you know, when all the guy ever talked about was peace. You know, I mean, like, there's no more ironic way to die if you're a celebrity than that. I mean, like, you know, like, it's senseless. So, yeah, it just really gets you sometimes when you think about these.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, the mystique is goes back to what you were kind of talking about earlier, too. The mystique of them as sort of an immortal being is gone when they die. Especially because you usually have, in so many cases, tons of footage, photos, everything from when they're younger. So they're also sort of immortalized in your head at typically a much younger age. And so when they do age, that's less, again, less, slightly less like shocking. Like if somebody dies at 89, 90, something, you might be sad, but you're not going to be like stricken and taken aback. But yeah, Paul Walker, a Chadwick Boseman, someone like that who's young, seems vital, and they're suddenly gone, that messes with your head in terms of like, well, they were here, I thought they'd always be here, and they, you know, seemed superhuman in so many ways, especially, you know, like Chadwick Boseman's a literal superhero in Black Panther, and it just seemed like nothing physically, that's the kind of person nothing could physically touch probably for the rest of his career and life. And then to find out he'd been sick basically the entire time he'd been Black Panther is like, well, if that's what's happening to him, what could happen to me? You know, really, really messes with your head.
And no, literal superhero though, because and not just Black Panther, all of this content that he made ever since that cancer thing, and for him to be able to do that kind of work that he was doing was pretty amazing. And, you know, we talk about celebrities, you know, like, oh, there's a certain age we expect it. We're all going to flip out when Betty White dies in 50 years from now when Betty White dies.
If she does not live us.
I will flip out. I really will, because
she died at 100. She was just getting started.
She still had so much more,
to do.
I still try and go to the zoo to get the Betty White tour, because you know that she's a volunteer at the zoo and she still does tours at the zoo. So here in LA.
So one of the most obvious reasons that people say, you know, that they experience grief when a celebrity dies is because they will never do or create anything new. One minimizing thing people say when an artist, actor, or musician dies is, at least the world still has all of their work. Though this is true when these works of art, music, or political action are often what has touched us about these celebrities, having their existing works doesn't mean there isn't a deep sense of loss that they will never create anything new.
Except for Tupac.
Except for Tupac
is still making albums.
About Prince, they just announced a new Prince record coming out this summer. He's released an album a year since he died.
So that's another reason why, you know, people grieve them. And I mean, that's, you know, very true. I mean, I don't think there's really much to say about that one.
Yeah. Like the Summers, though, you're like, you know what? They haven't put out a good record in like 15 years. So I think it's all right, you know.
Yeah.
There's some stars when they pass, they're really only playing a certain era.
They're going to be something new.
Yeah. And not really playing the most recent stuff.
Yeah. Because, like, there are those people that, like, celebrities that will die inevitably in the next few years. That if we were doing something like this still, or if we were doing our regular show, there'd be a joke in the show that say that their life actually caught up to their career. You know, and it's sad but true. And I think we've actually made that joke a couple of times about a few people. And you know what? Nobody said boo because it was probably true. Like, if Johnny Depp dies tomorrow, God forbid, if he dies tomorrow, he really, you know, he's had his time. We're good. Anything he does at this point is just going to fuck it up worse. Army Hammer. Go for it, Army.
Army.
He's going to live to 100.
Because he's a vampire.
He's a cannibal.
No, I'm going to tell you.
That's the secret to youth.
When Army passes away and they get an invite and it's like a buffet, don't go.
Oh my god.
Was it you, Joe? Or so I've seen people joke that like when I go, you have to you have to prop me up like holding a salsa.
Oh no, that's me. No.
That was you. Okay.
This is exactly what I want. I want a hot buffet, my casket, and a cold buffet, and then I'll be holding the cheese and the salsa. So if you want to dip your chips, you're gonna have to come visit me. So yeah.
I love it.
And then I'm going to be cremated, and I'm going to give each person's going to get a little bit of my ashes. But the whole thing is that you have to figure out a way to sneakily drop it in Disneyland without getting caught.
They're
going to make a game out of it.
You know, I would have taken it to the Arc Light, but it's closed.
It'll be open by then.
No,
I ain't going anywhere just yet.
My dad has had a couple different thoughts for his ashes. First, he wanted to be launched into space. Realized that was going to be prohibitively expensive, at least at the time. Maybe that'll change. Maybe we can still launch him into space when he eventually goes. But actually, my uncle got a master's degree in gerontology recently, which is about, you know, studying caring for older people, you know, as the boomer generation gets older, they have older aging parents, et cetera, et cetera. One of the assignments was talk to somebody in the boomer age group who needs to do like end of life planning because not enough people do it, sad but true. And ask them, you know, what they want to do and everything. And so he was like, I'll ask my brother. And he goes, okay, Tom, what do you want for your plans? And my dad's like, well, I've designed a submersible that can hold my ashes that will propel itself. And he was like, with your money and shit, you dumbass, I don't care about the fucking submarine you designed.
You know, if you can't afford to put someone's ashes in space, just so you know, NASA does have a program where you can put their names onto like satellite things that are going up into space.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And I put my friend, unfortunately, she had lost both her cats really close together, and so I put them on the Mars rover. So her cats are on Mars right now.
Oh my god!
So yeah, so my dad has like a Jules Verne level like submersible design to like hold his ashes that's supposed to be released in Lake Michigan, and maybe he'll also figure out what my brother and I are supposed to do.
I hate to say this, but I feel really bad that he has this really really elaborate submersible and then he's going to put it in Lake Michigan, which is
it's not an issue. we're not from the coast,
it's
man.
It's going to get stuck under like a sunken 68 Old Oldsmobile Coronado.
No, you don't do it in Chicago, though. You got to go up into the actual coast of Michigan, and then you'll get a little more quality bottom of a lake.
So who do you want sent to Uranus?
Well, look at Danny going blue.
No.
Oh, Danny. I
already asked Jennifer Aniston yesterday to give me a call, but I mean, Jennifer Aniston, if you want to go to my Uranus.
You know what? I almost asked the person giving me the vaccine today if they would put it in my bullet.
I really wish he would have. I was waiting for him to do that.
Oh, my God. Why?
But instead, I asked him, has any guys cried when you did this? And the guy said, only one. So
Pete, you only needed one shot if you would have went there, but you went for the arm, so you got to take another shot.
Ah, damn it! Oh, no.
Okay, so because music plays such an important part in the story of our lives, when a musician we are a fan of passes, it can often be much more upsetting than a lot of other deaths. This morning, Grunge.com published an article with the results of a poll they did in which they asked their readers what musician that died affected them the most. So before we go to the list, can each of us name the three musicians we think are going to be on the top of the list?
Oh.
So, Kurt Cobain.
I know who they are, so I'm not
okay.
And I know because I wrote it.
Now it's Grunge Magazine, right? Did you say Grunge Magazine?
Yeah.
Kurt Cobain, Cornell.
Well, no, hold on. Grunge, just so you know, Grunge Magazine does not have to do with just grunge music.
Well, shit, then. I'm still going to say Kurt Cobain, Chris Cornell, and let's go with Lane Staley. I'm from Seattle. I'm sorry.
Hey, Danny, what about you? What do you think?
Danny's Googling it.
Kurt Cobain.
Danny, are you cheating?
That's definitely one. No. Sorry. Remember, baby.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Likely story.
You know, you didn't have a baby, Danny. I just hope you know that.
Right? No, I know I didn't have the baby. Amy Winehouse. And I would say Michael Jackson.
Okay, Elizabeth, what do you think?
I will go with Kurt Cobain, David Bowie, And is this like of all time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Kurt Cobain, David Bowie, and I'll say Elvis.
Okay. Joe.
I'm going to go with Kurt Cobain, definitely David Bowie, and I am going to say Michael Jackson on that one.
Mm.
Okay, so you guys were
pretty far off, actually.
Well, number one, 30% of the poll said Michael Jackson's death was the most impactful musician.
I'm on there, so.
One out of three, ain't bad.
Uh-huh. There you go, that's it.
Roughly about 15% each were most troubled by the death of Prince and John Lennon.
Okay.
Number four was a surprise, as 14% said John Denver's death in a plane crash was.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a shocker.
Yeah, 6% said Tom Petty, while 5% said George Harrison. The remaining 15% was a mix of many of the artists, some of the ones that you guys included, Elvis Presley, Kurt Cobain, David Bowie, and Linkin Park's Chester Bennington.
So
do you think this is a good representation? And if not, who else do you think should have been on this list?
I'm very curious what their polls, who their sample was. Mm-hmm. This field. Who were the top three again?
It was 850 people that I guess they're all readers of Grunge.
This feels like a
850
older
people that still get the magazine sent to them.
I subscribe to Grunge. who were the top three again? Just real quick.
It was the top one was Michael Jackson. Then it was Prince and John Lennon to get on it together, and then John Denver.
Feels like some white guys, older white guys.
Prince sounds like a whole bunch of white. I mean, the fact that John Denver's on that list.
It's because John Denver. Michael Jackson and Prince. I was. That's why I wanted to double check. I was like, before I say this, who were my top ones again? Yeah, I still feel like this is an older collection of white gentlemen.
I would have wanted to see Marvin Gaye on that list.
Yeah.
His death was very tragic as well. So that would be probably somebody.
Own dad killed him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you think when we had that run, it's funny because there was like John Denver died in what, 78 or something like that?
No, he died in the 90s.
No, it wasn't that long ago.
Was it?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to look it up.
He was in this experimental plane that he built. But like, there was a time when we were losing musical artists, really, really exceptional musical artists, like really, really quick. That whole Jimi Hendrix era, you know, we lost Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix, and we all lost them like in a bunch. Where they would talk about the 28 thing, like
the 27 club,
27 when they go to 27, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that numbed people a little bit, like they were just expecting artists to pass away?
Yeah. I think it started that in a way, yeah, because it was like, oh, artists do drugs or have hard lives and, you know, and struggle emotionally. By the way, John Denver died in 1997.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it also goes into this whole thing that we know so much more about people now, like Amy Winehouse. Everybody knew that she was doing a lot of drugs, you know.
And had all the struggles. So, yeah. Like,
it wasn't a huge surprise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pete?
You know, one person that I'm really surprised has not even been mentioned the whole time, Whitney Houston.
Yeah,
it's like, and you know, that was tragic. I mean, because this was a woman who had kind of like been the biggest star in the world, then kind of like got wrecked with all the problems with drugs and alcohol, and then started to kind of make some kind of comeback, and then done. Like that's, you know. Plus, Kevin Costner didn't protect her.
I watched that documentary with my
friend. Can't be there all the time.
With my friend who we both worked at the One Entertainment News show we worked at the time. And it was a lot of things we still didn't know because we just, new information brought to light. But then towards the end when it got into when she died and everything like that, we were both like, this is such like a deja vu thing because we lived through this and in many ways participated in some of this coverage and everything. So it was sort of like a weird, like it's happened before, but like, you know, I feel like it's one of not the first documentary, but one of the documentaries where I was like, I lived through that, you know, like I know there are other documentaries about things I might've lived through, but like, it's the first one I felt like a connection with it, even though it was like, I was working, But boy, were the ratings so good, you guys. Afterwards, we got free lunch for a month. By the end, we were sick to our stomachs of free food. Let me tell you. I work in a weird industry, man.
Okay. Any final thoughts on today's show?
Pretty fucking depressing.
Yeah, I was kind of a downer, right?
We're going to do a much fun show.
I hope that like all the people that we mentioned gets people to go out and listen again or watch or read and just really celebrate all of these people who passed away, but their contributions to art, to music, to our lives. And that I think is the upbeat thing. I mean, we'll talk about Robin Williams and stuff like that, but you know, hey, yeah. You know, if this goes, hey, you know, I haven't seen, you know, Good Morning Vietnam or whatever on a long time, I'm going to go watch it tonight. Or man, I'm going to go put on that Bowie mix that I have and all that. So if you've listened to that and then say, hey, you know what, I'm going to go, then that's a good thing. You know, that's a positive.
I have kind of a funny story in that regard. So about a month, maybe two after Robin Williams passed away, I think Hook was on Netflix and I was like, you can watch this. It's not like you knew him. 2 fucking hours later, in a ball, when he's standing on the outside the window at the end, he goes, "To live would be an awfully big adventure." I was like, "Oh my god, I wasn't ready! I thought I was ready, and I wasn't, and I was losing it." So bear that in mind. If it's still fresh for you, maybe don't watch like a really poignant thing. Like, you know, just think it through. If it's gonna punch your emotional button way too hard.
I mean, I personally was not a big DMX fan, but while everybody else was talking about his music and stuff like that, I went and watched Deadpool that night because that one scene with DMX's song and stuff like that and all, that's the thing that DMX affected me the most. So that's what I watched.
I didn't realize he was playing on the radio when I was driving somewhere on Saturday, and I did not realize. I often say to any pet, but obviously my cat most recently, I love to say, I love my baby lover and never let him go while I pat and rub the cat's tummy. Aww. And I didn't realize it was a DMX lyric. Because I was like, oh, well, yeah, he had an impact on my life.
It's better than doing the line, you know, I love my N-words, but where's my bitches? which would have just been a completely different experience.
That would be really, really weird.
You want to fight me, fight these tears. So guys, go out and celebrate all these artists. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Make it a positive. Enjoy it. Enjoy and love the stuff that they gave us.
Yeah. It's like they said on South Park, of all things, when they introduced the goth kids for the first time, and Stan was really sad, and he falls in with the goth kids, and then Stan meets up with the Butters, and Butters is sad, and Stan's like, well, don't you want to, like, feel all darkness? And Butters is like, well, no, because, you know, because he's heartbroken about, like, the girl from Raisins, the Hooters knockoff thing, but Butters says something like, you know, it's kind of beautiful that I can be that sad, so it's kind of a beautiful sadness, and I'll be okay. And then he walks away, and I think of that from time to time, where it's okay to feel sad about things, because something impacted you so much, like Joe was saying, that you can feel so strongly in such a positive way about it, that it hurts, but the hurt will pass, and you can still enjoy all the things.
You know, and I also want to say too, like, if you have the opportunity and if you're able to see someone perform, do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that, I mean, I think I consider myself very fortunate that I've seen a lot of people that, you know, once they're gone, I can say at least I saw them once in concert. Mm-hmm. The only one we haven't, and I think Peter hasn't seen him either, is Stevie Wonder.
Oh, yeah.
No. He's one that, you know, we're just like, oh my gosh, you know, I'd love to see him at least once. But if you have the opportunity and a chance to go see someone in concert that you really admire, you go see them.
Or even someone doing a talk. I've been to two Mel Brooks things now, because I love Mel Brooks, and I was like, it was actually both around my birthday, I think, and I was like, I'm not waiting for anybody, I'm not going to try to wrangle anybody, this is something I want to see and do, I'm going to go do it. And actually, yeah, John Cleese.
I think you're in the same boat with me as like a lot of people that we respect are like comics and comedian writers. So I was very lucky to have got, like, I had the opportunity to meet Steve Martin, and I did, and I said, Don Rickles, just before he passed away, I got to meet him and all that. And so, yeah, if you get the chance, go see. And then, man, you guys, I am going to be a total mess the day that Weird Al passes away. because I've seen him now. He's the artist I've seen the most in concert. I think like 5 times, hopefully going for 6. So,
Elizabeth, how will you feel if Bigfoot gets Bryce Johnson?
Oh my God, I don't know. I mean, I'll feel happy for Bryce that like he's like confirmed, but sad that we've lost Bryce. He'll be happy. He'll be like, I knew it, and then dead.
Of course, he'll probably be in the tub, in the cabin, or on the couch. Get a massage when Bigfoot bursts
in. What if he doesn't kill him and he just pulls him into the gateway into the other dimension?
Right, I was going to say, for all we know, he could just pull Bryce into the portal, and then that's a whole different thing. They did their own like cryptid bracket thing on their show, and they had a thing. It got down to Bigfoot versus Pennywise, and it because Pennywise becomes what you fear. It, for Bigfoot, it was like being found out, and so Pennywise was going to turn into Bryce and expose Bigfoot, and that's what killed Bigfoot out of the bracket. And Bryce was like so upset, but he's like, that's true though. No, I can't believe I took out Bigfoot. And then you know who won the whole bracket? Fucking E.T.
I was going to say it would probably be the people watching that won.
It was
his bulletproof man.
They're less aggressive because it's just the three of them on that show, but it was a very fun bracket show.
They'll be talking to our lawyers.
There's no me screaming.
We got to trademark these brackets.
None of those guys were screaming at the top of their lungs that somebody was a fucking idiot for not picking Wedding Singer in a bracket. I stand by that argument, though.
Okay, well, that's our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m.
Well, we won't be talking about death.
No, tomorrow will be a death-free day, unless somebody dies in the next 12 hours.
I want that new album, Tupac.